Hello, this is Kathleen, and today, Thursday, August 20th, I'll be reading to you from the Daily News of Newburyport. Getting into gear. Port firefighters delight kids at local library, by Matt Petrie, Newburyport. As summer nears its end, dozens of families gather together in the sun-drenched Emma Andrews Library lawn Wednesday morning to enjoy a visit from some of the city's firefighters. This is part of the traditions for the community and for the kids to make sure that they understand the firefighters are not dangerous, Emma Andrews, Library President Kim Clapes said. They are not evil people. They are coming in to save them and to rescue them. The event kicked off at 10 a.m., with kids mingling with their parents as they awaited the fire truck. Some kids worked on paper fire trucks, while others sat on blankets under tents listening to stories. At around 10:30 a.m., the firefighters arrived with children running to the front gate to greet them before following them to the back lawn for the demonstration. Lieutenant Matt Houle was joined by firefighters Matt Thurlow and Tim Powers for the visit. Thurlow led much of the discussion at one point when asking the kids when the kids thought they should call 911. If you left your stove on and it started a fire, one kid called out. Thurlow agreed and gave some other examples. If someone's sick or not feeling well, you can also call us, Thurlow said. You can call us really for any issue at all that you think is necessary for us to come respond to, and whether it's a fire, a strange smell, if someone's not feeling well, you can definitely call us and we'll come help out. Moving on, he asked the crowd how they would know if there was a fire in their house. That thing that beeps on your ceiling, a kid asked. Yes, a fire alarm or a smoke detector, Thurlow replied. That'd be really, really loud. He asked the kids if they knew what to do when they hear the fire alarm, with some crying out to call 911 and others yelling to find an exit, both of which Thurlow said are important steps. First, get out of the house, he said. That's what we want you to do first. Get out of the house and then dial 911. Next, Thurlow touched on the topic of pets during a fire. Now, when do you have to go out? Say you have a kitty, he said. When you realize your kitty's in the house, you can't go back, and we get that kitty. We want you to stay out. When we get there, we're going to go in, and we're going to put out the fire and try to get your kitty or your dog or whatever you have. Thurlow also warned kids not to hide during a fire. We don't want you to go under the bed, he said. We don't want you to hide in closets. We don't want you to do any of that. Eventually, it was time for the kids to see what a firefighter in full gear looks like, with Powers donning the equipment, including an oxygen tank and a respirator. He kind of sounds like Darth Vader a little bit, Thurlow said. At around 10:45 a.m., the firefighters had to cut the visit short. We have a couple of calls going on. We have to run, Thurlow said. Before they left, they threw on the lights and sirens of the truck, with the families lining up to wave them off. Clapes said in 15 years of having the fire department visit, this had never happened, joking she had jinxed it earlier that day. I swear I said something to them this morning, because the firehouse behind where I live was leaving for a call this morning when I was on my way here, and I said, geez, I'm so glad it wasn't you guys, she said. And sure enough, there you go. They get the call. But now the kids get to see they're good people, and they're going to go save somebody else. I love it. I just grabbed him like a soldier would grab him. Salisbury man recounts rescuing fire victim, by Caitlin D., Salisbury. A local man is reflecting on his efforts to extricate an elderly man from Friday's five-alarm blaze on Atlantic Avenue. On Friday night, the Salisbury Fire Department responded to a fire at a multifamily home on 24 Atlantic Avenue. But once firefighters arrived on the scene, the flames had spread to another building, eventually impacting four buildings in total and becoming a five-alarm fire. As a result of the blaze, two people sustained serious injuries, resulting in them being transported to an area hospital. The blaze also left 24 Atlantic Avenue charred, with metal fences lining the building Monday. At the time of the fire, 26-year-old Ron Pearson, who was driving in a car down a nearby road when he saw a plume of smoke rising from the area. The father of two immediately jumped out of the vehicle and took off in the direction of the fire to ensure that his friend, who lives on the second floor, was safe, not knowing his friend was at work at the time of the blaze. Upon arrival, Pearson found the building in flames, and while he was trying to figure out what to do next, he saw an elderly man and woman trying to extricate themselves from the back half of the building. Pearson said the elderly man had helped the woman out of the building safely, but upon trying to remove himself from the area, fell into the driveway less than 10 feet from under the flames. After falling, the man was unable to get up. Pearson sprung into action and dragged the man away to get him out of harm's way, eventually being aided by others. "I just grabbed him like a soldier would grab him, under his arms, and just dragged him as if he was a wounded soldier that needed help," Pearson said. However, because the man had fallen so close to the fire, Pearson and others who tried to help were dealing with the blaze's oppressive heat. "It was close enough to where my face felt like it was in front of a campfire. Really close," Pearson said of the flames. But in spite of the high temperature and higher stakes, Pearson assured the man that he would not abandon him. "During the process, I had told that man, 'I am not going to let you go until you're okay,'" he said. Pearson did just that and ensured that the man was safely away from the flames before both men received medical attention, with Pearson sustaining a second-degree burn on his arm and a lesser burn on his back, and the man being transported to the hospital. Despite his injury, Pearson said he was glad to have helped the man in his time of need and expressed that he hoped someone would do the same for him and his family if the roles were reversed. "It makes me feel good to know maybe one day, if I'm ever in trouble, or if my kids are ever in trouble, I know that hopefully someone would be there," he said. Newberry Animal Hospital changes paws. New ownership begins on August 31st by Matt Petrie, Newberry. After over three decades of treating Fluffy, Fido, and other pets, Newberry Animal Hospital owner John Grillo recently announced he would be handing over the reins and stepping into retirement. "I'm pleased to share that as of August 31st, 2026, the practice is being entrusted to a new medical director, Dr. Deborah Berber, who will be taking over operations," Grillo said in his announcement post to the hospital's Facebook page on Sunday. "She has been a respected part of the greater Newburyport community for many years, and we are very lucky to welcome her to Newberry Animal Hospital." On Monday, Berber said she has been a veterinarian for 26 years, practicing in the region for the last 11. "I currently live in Amesbury," Berber said. "When I was approached with this opportunity, it was a way for me to be an owner, but not to have to take on all responsibility of running the hospital. I can help lead the veterinary team to continue on Dr. Grillo's legacy of what he established over the last 40 plus years. while Berber is set to serve as the new medical director. She is actually one of three new co-owners. She is joined by Dr. Peter Glassman and his son, Ben Glassman. The father and son duo founded the Boston's Brookville Veterinary Health in January with the goal of partnering with the next generation of independent veterinary hospital owners. Our goal really is to be an alternative to the corporatization of veterinary health and to provide support and facilitate new ownership opportunities for young veterinarians who want to own their own business, Ben Glassman said. His father, Peter Glassman, brings 43 years of veterinary experience to the hospital. I feel like we know how to grow a practice, Peter Glassman said. We know how to provide exceptional care. And with Deb leading the medical team and leading the business side, it is a great formula for success and getting where our vision wants to take us. They all agreed they want to build on the exceptional hospital Grillo left them. We want to grow the hospital back to where it was when it was a 5 or 6 person practice, number one. But we want to go beyond that, Peter Glassman said. We want to provide opportunities for staff and opportunities for clients by providing a wider scope of services, more convenient hours, an updated hospital, updated both sort of physically, but IT upgrades that will make communications a lot easier and make the entire visit experience more pleasurable. At the same time, we are providing the same extraordinary care. Grillo thanked his incredible staff for all the hard work and effort they have put into the practice. Your care, teamwork, and compassion have been the heart of this practice. You have helped countless pets feel safe, supported, and loved. Day after day, appointment after appointment, I'm proud of what we accomplished together, and I have full confidence in the team who will continue this mission, Grillo wrote. As I See It, Democracy's Truth Crisis by William Kolbe. Democracy is complex. It thrives on disagreement, debate, and passionate arguments about a nation's direction and the values guiding us. But what happens when the foundation of that debate, truth itself, becomes optional? When politicians can lie without consequence, and misinformation becomes widespread, advantageous, or rewarded? The public loses trust in democratic institutions, can be tricked into voting against their best interest and values, and nonsensical policies are implemented. The philosopher Hannah Arendt once dryly noted, "Truth and politics are on rather bad terms with each other." No kidding. Right now, truth and politics in the United States seem to be not only on bad terms, they appear to be in open warfare. It is a war that can feel inevitable. Whenever politics gets really heated, reason often seems to go out the window. And yet the pursuit of truth is absolutely crucial for democracy, wrote Monica Vilhauer in Psychology Today. Despite all of the barriers that exist in our way, social media, lying politicians, a decaying journalistic culture, and even human psychology, citizens in a democracy must find ways to distinguish what's true from what's false. Democracy is at stake. Conventional wisdom has it that for democracy to work, it is essential that we, the citizens, agree in some minimal way about what really looks like, what reality looks like. We are not, of course, all required to think the same way about big questions, or believe the same things, or hold the same values. In fact, it is expected that we won't. But somehow or another, we need to have acquired some very basic shared understanding about what causes what, what's broadly desirable, what's dangerous, and how to characterize what's already happened. But citizens can't have reasons for what they believe if the government prevents them from finding out what's true or false. That's why a government, even an elected government, becomes less democratic to the extent that it ceases caring about the truth. Democracies rarely fall in a single moment. They erode through 1,000 small silences that go unchallenged, wrote Caroline Good in Fulcrum. When citizens can no longer see or hear the truth, or when leaders manipulate what the public is allowed to know, the foundation of self-government begins to crack long before the structure falls. Good added, when truth becomes negotiable, democracy becomes vulnerable, not because citizens stop caring, but because they stop receiving the information they need to act. The framers wrote the First Amendment because they understood the danger of leaders who try to control information. They had lived under a government that censored newspapers, punished criticism, and used fear to silence dissent. So they wrote a simple, absolute command: Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of the press. They were not protecting journalists as a profession. They were protecting the people's right to know what their government is doing. Yet today, we are watching the very scenario the framers feared. Leaders who dislike scrutiny increasingly turn to a familiar strategy: discredit the press so the public will distrust the facts. They label critical reporting as fake, call journalists names, question their motives, and attack their credibility. These tactics are not spontaneous. They are strategic. They are designed to weaken the institutions that hold power accountable and to convince citizens that only the leader can be trusted. Democracies do not collapse in silence. Citizens hear what is happening. They see what is happening. The danger is not that the public is unaware. It is that leaders work to distort, deny, or drown out what the public witnesses. When noise replaces information and denial replaces accountability, leaders can act without scrutiny. If leaders cannot tell the truth, they should at least refuse to lie. If they cannot answer a question, they should not attack the person asking it. If they cannot be transparent, they should simply say no comment at this time, rather than distort, dehumanize, or deny. Truth is a public good, and when it is weakened, the entire civic ecosystem suffers, Good warned. A nation that cannot see or hear the truth cannot remain a democracy. But a people who insist on truth, who demand transparency, challenge misinformation, and hold leaders accountable will always have the power to protect it and to pass it forward. The issue is not just professional spinners talking about alternative facts or the current U.S. president bending the truth and spreading conspiracy theories at every turn, from mass rallies to ex-social network rants. The deeper problem stems from growing sense we all have that today, even hard evidence of the kind that used to settle arguments about factual questions won't persuade people whose political commitments have already led them to the opposite conclusion. Rather, citizens now belong to epistemic tribes. One person's truth is another's hoax or lie. Just look at how differently those of different political leanings interpret the evidence of global warming, or the conclusions of the Mueller report on Russian involvement in the 2016 Trump presidential campaign. We've gotten to the point now that many people are convinced that the boundaries between truth and untruth are, in the end, as subjective as everything else. It is all a matter of perception and spin. Nothing is immune, and it doesn't really matter. So, for our democracy to survive, truth must matter as a form of collective aspiration. We need to progress away from lies and propaganda and spin, and toward a truer and more consensual view of reality, however elusive. Only then can we begin to close the perilous distance between the promises of democratic ideals and the fractured realities in which we actually live and govern. Dr. William Kolba, an Andover resident, is a retired high school and college teacher and former Peace Corps volunteer in Tonga and El Salvador. He can be reached at bila.kolb9@gmail.com. Going Gold Fundraiser Next Month by Caitlin D. Amesbury. With the start of September comes the beginning of Childhood Cancer Awareness Month and the 8th annual Going Gold Fundraiser, hosted by local nonprofit Cadence Crusaders. Cadence Crusaders founder Joe Hamill said the September 3rd fundraiser will have something for everyone, including bowling, food, drink, and numerous raffles. Proceeds from the fundraiser, which will be held at Amesbury's Game Town Lanes, will go toward the nonprofit's work to financially support children battling cancer and their families. The work is close to Hamill's heart as she created the organization in honor of her great-grandson, Caden, who passed away from neuroblastoma at 13 months old. Now, years after its founding, the organization supports 25 to 30 families per year, which is made possible in part by this fundraiser. In years past, Hamill said the fundraiser has been a massive success, with the community lauding the event and the number of attendees growing year after year. "It's all been a really good," she said of the feedback from the community. "The event gets bigger and bigger, so we're getting more people attending, and they all seem to like it." Similarly, Jillian Collins, vice president of Cadence Crusaders, said the nonprofit's board has been happy to see the fundraiser grow over time and is now looking forward to bringing it back for year 8. "It feels absolutely amazing," she said, "about hosting the event for another year. We grow every year, more and more. And more people show up. We see new faces, new interest. We have new sponsorships every year. So it's really nice to see how the community comes together every single year for us." Alongside the fact that Going Gold raises funds to make Cadence Crusaders work possible, Collins also said events like this one raise awareness about childhood cancer, which is crucial to the nonprofit's mission. "All of these events that we have and go to, it actually helps to promote more awareness. And each event we have familiar faces, and then we have some new faces. It just continues to spread awareness throughout the community. And it just makes us feel so good to know that the support that we have through our community," she said. Now the nonprofit's board is gearing up for another Going Gold fundraiser, which Hamill said would not be possible without the greater Amesbury community's support. "Our community is amazing. I've lived here most of my life, but it's just overwhelming the support that we get from the community," she said. Those interested in learning more about the event can visit Cadence Crusaders' website at https://www.facebook.com/ www.CAIDENS, Crusaders INC. Paper shredding event coming to Amesbury. Amesbury, the Union Congregational Restoration and Preservation Alliance, is hosting a paper and document shredding benefit on Saturday, September 19th, from 9 a.m. to noon at the Union Congregational Church's parking lot, 350 Main Street, Amesbury. Shred all outdated documents safely and securely. View the shredding in progress on the Shred Source Truck viewing screen. Suggested donation is $7 per box or bag. The church is also collecting non-perishable food items for our neighbor's table. For more information and questions, call 978-388-6591. Actors Studio presents Flamenco Doubleheader, Salisbury. The Actors Studio of Newburyport, located at 1 Merrill Street, No. 3, Salisbury, presents a flamenco doubleheader on Saturday at 7 p.m. The Latin Jazz Trio, featuring John Trevano on classical guitar, Roger Kimball on bass and cello, and Cinnamon Blomquist on flute, brings rich, textured expression to its take on Andalusia's cultural blend of flamenco music. Alma Sangra features singer-guitarist Antonio Aguilar and dancer Meg Castellanos. The group's music is deeply rooted in traditional Mexican music and expands beyond genre, drawing on influences from Ali Farca Torre, Chavela Vargas, and flamenco. Together, these two groups promise to deliver a night full of raw emotion and rhythmic indulgence, continuing a long tradition of musical storytelling, according to organizers. Tickets are $25 and can be purchased online at www.newburyportacting.org. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you all have a safe and well day.